Daniel, there have been some games and there have been some limbs, and that was quite a game, and there were quite a lot of limbs at the end of that one. Pretty special.
Fucking all right. Oh my God, what a day. To start with the football, I guess, just, it was one of those games that had almost everything, save a massive ruckus. Everything that you could possibly want in a game of association football was right there, and it was just pure, uncut, fucking Manchester United there. Football taught by Matt Busby. Just everything you would want to see was right there. It was, nothing on earth.
Nothing like at all. It was pretty special. The we're going to do the tactics pod for the Patreon backers show. Well, extra Patreon backers show, I should say, with Darnish tomorrow. So we'll go deeper dive on that. But for half of this game, I'm pulling my hair out going, what are you doing? This absolute nonsense. Like, acres of space in midfield for Liverpool to run through. But you can say the tactics were mad. You can't question the heart of those players. I mean, for so often this season, we've like wondered, like, do they want this? Do they care? Are they up for it? Are they fit? And not today. They're like Bruno dying on his ass by the end. Garnacho running, sprinting for 120 minutes. He didn't train this week because he's got a hamstring problem. Harry Maguire up front and Bruno at quarterback. Absolute madness. And the perfect end to it.
I mean, it's why football's the greatest thing in the world. It's why United's the greatest iteration of the greatest thing in the world. And I mean, I'd had an absolutely ludicrous day leading up to it, which I guess... I don't. Is it enough to tell? If it isn't, I won't take offense if you cut me. So I was working for Guardian today, and in my lunch, I had to take an hour, a very specific time, in order to get my daughter my car. I've leased a car. It's in the garage, having all the dents have been acquired over the last 5 years fixed. My brother-in-law's just bought a new car. I'm driving that around, and my wife can't use it. So I've sent her to this. My daughter's gone to a party, a fencing party, of course. Because why not? In a cab, I have to leave in an hour. I have to get to the fencing party. Then I have to take her to a paintball party. Then I have to get back to my desk. So I set out knowing that I'm pushed for time here. And just on setting out, a squirrel runs in front of my car. So I stop, go around it, and then it dashes back the other way, like just completely foxes me. And I've run over the squirrel, which is absolutely horrendous. Then I drive off feeling like an arsehole. And I'm thinking, what does one do in that situation? Are you meant to make sure you finish the job? Or do you assume that this
land?
I don't know.
Run on the squirrel?
No, in Jewish law, that's like you put animals out of their misery. Like, you don't let an animal suffer. But then I'm like, and I've gone down the road. And I'm in this massive hurry also. And I'm thinking, surely, like, however much a Land Rover weighs is sufficient. I don't have to have... So anyway, I go. My wife's like, you coming into the party? I say no, because I'm in a hurry. And then obviously get there and think birthday cake. So stop the car. That the previous day had been telling me there was something wrong with the battery, but I've driven around in a fair bit, assumed I've charged it up. Go and get my wife, my daughter, get in the car. The car won't stop. So then have to tell my brother-in-law his new car is jiggered and have to wait for him to stop his day to come and get me. He gives me his other car. He then has to take the other car back to the garage. I come back to my desk, and then obviously we have this ludicrous game of football. I thought that, I mean, I think if you're just like thinking about it before, which is Ten Hag looked not bang on in, you never look bang on in a three-piece suit, but you always look like someone who thinks you look bang on, who's decided, if you're in a three-piece suit, you basically decided that you need to look more bang on than all the other people who look bang on in their two-piece. Like, I didn't love Fergie's three-piece in Barcelona. It was much less rude than the club blazer trouser combo that he absolutely nailed. In that really like Rangers way of like crisp side parting blazer, tie, trouser. But Ten Hag looked a lot better than Clough, who looked like a scruff. And also, is his top Rowan Newton's? Is it one tooth?
I don't know. I mean, Clough looks like someone who lives with the squirrels in a park on the bench.
I feel like his house is probably a mess.
Did you see, talking to Clough, we'll get back to your hit and run on the squirrel in a moment, Daniel.
Have I incriminated myself there? You entrapped me by telling me to do it.
I think we might have. We've got your daughter committing knife crime and you killing squirrels. I mean, that's absolutely outrageous stuff.
Do I now have to do this every game?
You might have to, yeah. You might. It's your
I've got to go on a squirrel rampage. I'm sorry, but this is for the greater good. You don't know it, but world is a better place.
Footballers are superstitious, aren't they? And I've lost the run of myself now. But did you see Klopp's interview after the game where he walked off? He was talking to Norwegian TV. Like, the man is so rude, and it's just magical as well.
But it's like, it's like he's doing it for us. It's like that Stephen Gerrard's book. Well, you read the serialization and you're like, I know that you're admiring your own candor in doing this. And I guess, like, I have some respect for that, but this is fantastic. It's like, this chapter's not for Liverpool fans, United fans. This is incredible. But I did see his interview, and it was surprising because he would have also, I mean, it's not, he would have also had some time to calm down.
Because it was quite a while after the game,
His ITV interview was good 20 minutes after the game if we saw it live. And so he's had a bit of time to calm down. He knows he's got to do these interviews, and yet he still can't help himself because he's got the needle. I actually, before any of the football happened, I copied out a quotation of Klopp's from from Friday that I thought actually summed up a lot of the difference between him and the people that have been managing United over the last few years, where he says this: injuries have affected us a lot, but two things have helped us. The dressing room culture and the structure we have set on the pitch. We have developed a lot during the season. We don't change the way we play. The boys know what they have to do when they come on. And when they don't play, they at least train in the same way. So if they do step on the pitch, they know what they have to do. It's not always something else. Everything around changed, but we didn't. We just played the way we wanted to play, and that helped a lot. We did that from the first day of the season. That made a real difference. We really found a good way to play with the shout. Don't need you basting yourself. But that's really the difference between United and Liverpool. And obviously, it's Klopp scored is his, whereas I think in the last game, it was Everton, where the back four was no players that were bought.
Right.
Another no 10 half players in the back four.
Ten half.
So it is easier. But if you need to, the lack of, if United played all the time like they played in the first 20 minutes today, they'd be in a much better position.
For sure, I mean, and in fact, on the front foot in the first 20 minutes, Ten Hag said after the game that we have fast players. That's why we sometimes want them to have the ball so we can create the space and play vertically. I mean, I may be like misquoting him slightly, but that's the tenet of what he said. And again, we'll talk with Darnish tomorrow about exactly the details behind that one. But that's not how he talked about football last season. So he's talking about it like that's the plan. The plan is total chaos. And in fact, when it was total chaos in extra time, when Harry Maguire was playing up front and Bruno and Eriksen were rotating at centre-back with Lindelof on the left and Dalot on the right, it worked in United's favour because I don't think Liverpool knew what was going on because United certainly didn't.
Well, I think, but even before that, when it was a more sensible game of football, like in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, United were great.
United played like a football team. And the truth is I fancied United to win this and I had the betting slip to prove it, but I got done more set by the more second half goals than first half goals aspect, I think. But anyway, I thought I fancied United because you look at that Liverpool team and I'm thinking, really? Like, the goalkeeper's good, but he's not Alisson, and he does look like Conchita from the Eurovision Song. Because the Eurovision, was it the Greek entrant in the Eurovision Song Contest a few years ago? I think he's a good keeper, but he's not as good as the usual keeper. I think Kwanzaa looks like, unfortunately, like he's going to be a really good player. Looks like he actually might be good enough to play centre-back for them. But Van Dijk's quite a long way over the other side now. Salah's brilliant, but he's not as good as he was, I don't think. Endo, McAllister and Szoboszlai. And that's an all right midfield. But if it's a midfield for any manager other than Klopp, it's not a particularly good midfield at all. And you look at that team, and I'm looking at the team, I think this team is all Klopp. Like this particular 11 that United are going to be playing today in that game. It's not, if you were given, like if you were say, go and sign some players, you can sign players from anywhere. How many players in that team would you even think about taking to United if you had the choice? Almost none. And the thing that makes them brilliant is not them, it's the manager. So I fancied us to win that. So I wasn't that surprised when we came out and played well because we say it all the time. The reason why we hate these dickheads so much is because we know they're quite good also, as well as being shit.
They're just more balanced today as well. So with Wan-Bissaka being back, we actually had two fullbacks on the pitch. Yeah, they might not both be wanting to play it or left back, but it just gave United balance. And that helped, didn't it? And a striker there as well. And all of a sudden, we look like an actual team. I was a bit concerned about, and we come on to him later, a bit concerned about Scott McTominay's presence in central midfield, because it does leave a big gap when him and Bruno Bush push forward, as they did frequently. But there's just much more of a balance to that team. Wan-Bissaka, he hasn't played for months, but he had a really good one while he was on the pitch. Dalot was
although that first minute almost where he takes that one away, he does actually really well, because I'm thinking, what on earth? I totally get why he's on the left, because you want Dalot on the right, and also because it means Salah's coming
exactly,
in on
Wan-Bissaka's
he's a good one-on-one defender, so it makes some sense. And then I was thinking, but what on earth is he offering going forward? He offers something immediately before immediately bollocksing it up again. And it was such a perfect encapsulation of him. But you mentioned T. Absolutely colossal game from him today. And he's had a good season, which however you slice, he's not good enough to play for us, but it would be hard to turn down 40 million for him. But I'm not really wanting to push him out the door.
No, and we talked about it at the end of last season when he was potentially going about, like, is he the player we'd really want to sell? He's not that good. Tactically, it's a mess. He does one thing very, very well, which is that third man run and getting in the right position. He's very composed in front of goal.
And he can finish.
Yeah.
Right, and he can finish. Yeah. Right, so I think that's harsh. He can also carry the ball sometimes. And he's quite useful defending in both. He's quite useful defending in the box,
set pieces
as well. So he reminds me in the sense of Lingard. So when we had Lingard, right, I remember Gary Neville saying he'd be a good 16th man. That it's just a wild card. You've got loads of quality players. And then you've got this other guy who can do some good shit sometimes that can be hard to stop and has just interesting abilities to make things happen in an attacking sense. And obviously they're completely dissimilar as players, but that's kind of what I think a bit about McTee, like a good 16th man who you can throw him on, and he has a bit of a knack for making stuff happen. Like, how many games has he played in this season where he hasn't scored or looked like he might? Not many.
Well, and he's got, I can't remember now, was it 7 or 8 goals this season? It's a good return from someone you wouldn't have in your first 11 normally if the balance of United's midfield is better. We'll see what happens with him next season, because I think a lot depends on whether United do make the Champions League. It's still not out of reach, given Villa only drew today. And fifth is probably going to be good enough, just looking at how many, like, England is still third in the coefficient. But they have way more teams in UEFA competitions than Italy or Germany. So I think it's
In synagogue this weekend, I learned that West Ham, again, West Ham beating Freiburg was a big result for this. I was advised. <That's>,
the important stuff that happens at synagogue. Yeah. But just a word for the player who's alongside McTominay today, Kobbie Mainoo, who, like, if United can sort out Eriksen, Casemiro, and maybe McTominay, like, exiting and bring in two holding players. And obviously they won't sign Amrabat because he's shite.
How is he not in the team today, even? I thought about that. Like, that is, like, the person who plays, who you were brought to deputise for, isn't playing. And you still can't get in the team. Oh, man. He is in an unbelievably crowded field. He is one of the biggest wastes of money of the place.
True. And unfortunately, it's only 10 million or something, plus his wages. So not that cheap. But to round the point off on Kobbie Mainoo, I mean, if you can get him as a ball-carrying number 8, he's going to be so good. I mean, you saw it today, his composure in tight spaces, his ability to beat a man. He'll score more goals as he gets more mature. He's got everything. I mean, Ian Wright asking for him to be in the England squad after the game today. I'm sure there's many United fans suggesting that perhaps they don't want Gareth Southgate ruining him, but he would add balance to that midfield as well. And just 18 years old in a game of that magnitude, just fantastic.
Yeah, he's one of those players who no one is saying he's not good, or he might not make it, or he's overrated, or he's this, or he's that. It's impossible to dispute how good he is, because he's so good at so many different aspects of the game. The main thing I'd like him to improve is I want him on the ball more, and that's not just his fault. But he'll learn. And I'm not sure what kind of player he is, because he can do everything, but he lacks, like, if he had more physicality, if he was bigger, then that's sort of the one thing that he doesn't have. And he, so to play as a number six without physicality, without being like a, I mean, because he's quite strong and he will fill out hopefully, but it might be quite hard to do that. I don't know, like, or it might be something that other teams could exploit. So when I think about what player I want United to sign, I guess if it we'll find out what player, whoever the manager is at the time thinks he is, will be obvious by the midfielder that they sign. But I do want someone physical. I think, because if you're going to have someone who's not physical and it's him and Bruno in the midfield, then you're going to be playing teams that are going to make it very physical to the
Sure. No, I think it's a physical defensive midfielder all two that they'll need to bring in the summer. Eriksen's out of contract. I'm sure they'll try and sell Casemiro for whatever they can get. Amrabat won't be retained. McTominay, we'll see. Maybe just for bodies, actually, they'll want to keep him. But just he's great. And it was a surprise when Ten Hag took him off. Maybe that's a sports science thing. I don't know why you'd go utter chaos ball like that. I mean, I guess it worked to some extent in the second half when there was just nobody really in midfield and everyone was pushing forward. So,
but I thought that the thing that changed really, I thought was, and I've come back to this quite a lot, because obviously football has become very systemized, and you can find all sorts of different ways to explain why a result happens, why one team beats another team. But something that Graham Souness says, always think about in these situations, and what an absolute joy his face was at the end of this game. He was trying so hard to look like, I'm really thinking about this so hard. But like, obviously the fury is just all over the place. But he says, the team that gets to the ball first wins. And he's right. And it doesn't, obviously, you then have to work out how you get to the ball first, all the things that can make that happen more often. But it's sometimes quite simple. And United got to the ball first in the first 20 minutes, and mainly was a lot of the reason why that was, because his anticipation is so good. And what he's got is, he's got this ability to extend the sort of ankle and foot from the really quickly, so that he's really, really good at nicking the ball away, whether he's defending or whether he's going past people. And again, he's just, because he knows how good he is, he's got that confidence. He's been so good at every level that he's never had to think, maybe I can't. He plays for United like he played in Patriot football. And that level of confidence is just, it's just outrageous, really. And
there are clips a few years ago of him just doing exactly what he did today, like in tight spaces, moving the ball, beating a couple of players with composure. He's very press resistant, and then playing the right pass, and he does look like he played when he was 15 years old.
I think, to finish off what we were saying about getting to the ball first, then after that we sat off. Like the difference came when we sat off and we played, and also after the first goal we played for half time. They were doing like this pathetic tippy tapping around the ball at the back, thinking they were being dead composed and sensible, but the ball's really fucking near your own goal. And you cannot be trusted. And you have to know that about yourselves.
Yeah.
And that ended up, that caused us aggravation. I think that they did that between the goals. But the first goal, their goal, did you think that he should have stopped?
Well, he got a good hand on it. Yeah. I mean, I asked this question on Twitter, and I think the majority opinion was no. People weren't blaming him, but he's got a very strong hand on that one. And you just wonder, you get that close to, well, one, it's on, I mean, I was going to say near post, but it's not really, is it? But, and he takes a minor deflection, but he's so.
No, it took a bit, that's harsh, big deflection.
Not as big as the second one.
I think. I wouldn't have got there with that. I mean, they are so spawny, this football team. I'm sure people used to say this about us, but we can criticize United's defending a little bit for the goal and maybe the keeping and whatever, but also I felt that they're a bit unlucky with the first two goals, both of them.
Yeah.
That it felt like a lot of things had to happen in an unusual sequence for the ball to get from where it started to look dangerous into the goal. And I tell you what I did think. I thought that the Nunez curler that Onana saves that then comes back to Salah, I thought that maybe should have gone around the post.
Yeah.
And I think I might be in the process of sort of trying to blame him for all three goals here. But
I don't know. They're all marginal.
I thought that could have gone around the
and,
post.
But he made some good saves generally and a few where he's got the ball out in difficult situations. I mean, Liverpool had 25 shots today, which is standard for a United game, or at least 25 in the first 90, I think. 25 overall, just looking at 28 from United today, by the way. We out-XG'd them, if you care about that sort of thing.
I think what's changed a lot is he's playing with confidence now. He's commanding his box, he's coming for crosses, and that is making the defenders more confident. And he's also stopped dropping absolute bollocks. He's now sort of dropping potential bollocks. And it's progress, I guess. And yeah, he's passing. We're getting more of the passing that we thought we were going to get. He's never going to be a top-level keeper, but in a really good team, he could be a good keeper.
In extra time, he basically pushed out into midfield and was pinging balls from the quarterback position, which I guess is one route to goal. Let's talk about Antony's equaliser for a moment. I mean, he's played out of his arse this season. I mean, for different reasons. He's not always been in the team. Both allegedly beating up his girlfriend and being dropped by Ten Hag, not contributing anything. This was his second goal in all competitions this season. He has no goals and no assists in the Premier League, I think. But it was a very nice finish. So, and in those moments...
It was a really, really good goal.
In those moments, he's got quality. It's just the rest of it I'm not so sure about.
He's not... He's had a shit season and... I thought he was better than a lot of other people did last season. I'm not saying I'm right. I thought he would always take the ball. I thought he never had any help from a fullback. He looked like he wasn't scared of playing for United, and I felt like there was something to work with. But I wanted a big improvement this season that we haven't got. But he doesn't mean he's got no ability. It's not true. He has some ability. He scored. Yeah, it was a real... I mean, when you see the changes and it's Antony and Maguire coming on, I'm obviously thinking, I'll fucking sort it.
Antony ended the game at left back.
I mean...
Which was it?
And Eriksen seemed to be at fullback for a bit. Well, he played well. I mean, he's someone, again, I could happily lose, but he's someone I can see uses for next season if he was around. But you only want him as
Yeah, and Antony will be around next season, and it's really nothing to do with whether Ten Hag's there or not, or whether we think we can get any money for him. His book value is more than his market value, and so it doesn't help United's FFP. In fact, it hurts United's FFP position significantly to sell him, basically. So I'd just be really surprised, and plus he's on a mega wage. So I think he'll be around, but that was easily his best moment of the season, easily. And then
it's just not. Yeah, he isn't. Yeah, he's not likable, really, is he? But it was. Yeah, he played quite well generally. Actually, there were times when you're looking at the screen, and a couple of times something happened. It was him, and I had previously immediately assumed it was Garnacho when I couldn't quite see exactly who it was from their gate or whatever. And that was Antony. Yeah, the changes looked mental and they didn't work initially, but they were actually very good in the end.
Well, they paid off, I guess. An assist and a goal from subs, yeah.
Well, it's not just because we won. Yeah, it's not just because we won. It's because from not long after the change, I thought we dominated. Over the course of that 120 minutes, Liverpool were the better team for about 40 minutes, perhaps. And United, with a better team the rest of the time, had by far the better of the chances and absolutely deserved to win, which is, I mean, you can't be, I feel like you're sort of in the spawny ones when you don't deserve to win, you sort of enjoy when you're the better team, and when you're the less good against a rival, when you're the less good team, it sort of feels better to beat them by playing well.
I mean, there's definitely flow over the game. They were great for 20, 25 minutes, and then either side of halftime, Liverpool dominated. They came back into it through the end of the 90, and I think maybe for the first half of extra time, I wasn't very confident about United's chances, especially after they jammed a goal in. But somehow, just like the utter chaos and the wild tactics worked. And like that goal at the end has come from a Liverpool corner, and where they're obviously trying to win it. And United have broke out. Garnacho, I don't think he weights the pass quite right. It's just a bit, he's a bit off it. And Ahmad has to break stride. And I'm thinking, fuck, he's gone on his wrong side and gone too wide. But it's a great finish. Just like couldn't be any more. If it's not there, it's not in.
That's brilliant. A brilliant game, brilliant. Actually. I thought that was maybe his best game for United. He was a proper threat. And what I loved, actually, about his contribution to the first goal was that he sees the passes on, but he doesn't want to alert the defender's attention to it. So he doesn't go there immediately. And he almost like does it on his tiptoes, he sneaks into position because he knows that defenders see him. And he does it too quickly. They'll shut him down. So he actually like the delay on it because it shows really good patience there. You're right that the pass was a shit pass. And I think I would have gone on the other side. I can't remember who it was, but I think there was someone on the other side who I guess I trusted to score more than I did Ahmad, who I thought did really well when he came on. But what I had heard about Ahmad is he lacks a bit of confidence. And I felt that even though I thought he played really well, like the good on the ball, comfortable on the ball, kept possession, he was taking conservative options rather than expressing himself. Yeah. But I agree that it was a really good finish. It was one that it's the kind that you sort of feel the keeper might save, but actually he couldn't really save it. And on which point it would be good, I think, to have some keepers in studios, because I feel like most of us know quite a lot about playing football now, and we know a lot less about
rugby. And there's, I mean, David Priest does some TV, doesn't he? I'm not on many of the major channels, but yeah, I think that would be right. Have some, if we're going to have referee analysis, we might as well have specialist keeping analysis, especially since anything above like 0.2 XG is normally put down as must score. Although I did think right at the end of the 90, Marcus Rashford must score. And sadly, he did not. I mean, he made up for it later.
That was a phenomenal miss. It is very rare that you see that kind of miss.
Did everything else right.
It was right there, and it wasn't like he miskicks it either.
Just wide.
Just like radar's off. I was not expecting to see that at all, but I'm obviously now very pleased he did miss, because it meant that we got to increase the misery. And the goal that he scored was a lovely, lovely finish and a very good pass into him as well. And also, big up Ahmad for his role in that goal, because I think if that's the one where Liverpool go through and he sneaks up on, is it Nunez?
Yeah.
And he robs the ball off him, and then United more or less go down the other end and score.
Yeah, it's right from the corner. He won a couple of balls, didn't he, Ahmad?
Yeah, he wins the one where they win it high as well. Is that for the winner? Also, Harvey Elliott I'm very pleased that his deflected, stuffy effort wasn't the winner. Not just because he looks like he's somehow transplanted his Nahan's muff onto his head.
Geez.
I mean, he is just...
Yeah, does his Nan bleach?
I don't take to him. Honestly.
Fair enough.
And it felt like what, because previously when Liverpool was starting to dominate, you wondered if it was going to be one of those games that looks like it's a game until it isn't. The kind of games we've seen quite a lot, but they weren't able to do that. So for them to then get the win in the other way by just, well, this was inevitable, basically, that at some point they were going to find a way to win, would have been equally annoying in its way. I felt like that one, I mean, I'm semi-joking when I said I'm blaming Onana for all three goals. I mean, I felt like we shouldn't have let all three of them. That's what I would say. A better goalkeeper than him would have made sure that at least one of those was
there.
Like, because I don't know, the Elliot one, I know it was a late deflection, but it felt like he got there and he went under his hands.
He also does his thing. I mean, he does all the time, which is anticipate which way it's going and step to that side and can't get back. I mean, it's been pointed out by what's the internet version of a goalkeeper tactico? There's a few people on Twitter who just comment on goalkeeping. And it's been pointed out that he has this kind of quirk where he anticipates and moves. And a few of the goals he's conceded this season are the result of this thing, where he takes a step. So he takes a step and can't get there as a result. Right, so, all right. Wow.
Yeah. And
what?
Because there's also part of the game where you're actually fearing, like, could this get messy? Because at half time, when it's 2-1, and you think, well, if Liverpool were to get the next goal in the next 20 minutes, that is an eminently possible outcome.
Well, yeah, then because what? We know they're not that resilient, this team. Like,
and actually, it was one of the first, it was to see a proper United onslaught against Liverpool. We haven't seen that kind of thing against a good team right. very often. Like, we've seen United beat all these teams, playing quite well, but a proper end-of-game onslaught where the other team's hanging on was... And it's just, how do they go about doing this repeatedly? And I think that if we're now accepting that this, like, massive gap in the middle of the pitch, Ten Hag knows it's going to happen. He can't be failing to notice it. So Izzy's basically saying that we're going to give up loads of low-quality chances, defend the box quite well.
That's what he's saying. Attackers. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that, when does that change? That doesn't change now. Does it change? Would it be like that with Martinez and Shaw back? Probably then. So it only changes when we're able to buy a midfielder to play with Bruno and Manu.
I think so. And again, it comes back to this thing, not to harp onto this, but it comes back to this thing about the new management wanting a particular style. We haven't had any communication on what that is, but it was quite clear that that is the plan. So amid all the stuff about Ten Hag's quality or not, and some of the weird decisions he's made this season, and whether he's been hamstrung by injuries, like, the overarching thing is still, is he the right man for this style? And also, how much is going to cost to fire him? And are there the right coaches available and all this kind of stuff? Is he the man for the Ineos style?
With the style thing, what we're seeing now is not what he wants the style to be. He's not. There's not a chance he's telling Ineos that he wants it to look like this next season. The question is whether Ineos accepts him saying it has to look like this right now. And maybe it does. Because who do we have who can make it not look like this? I don't know. But on the other hand, am I thinking if we had a different manager with these players, would it look like this?
No.
Maybe not. I don't think, like, obviously today's game is helpful for him keeping his job, but it's going to take a lot more.
I mean, it's not just that we won and we're in the semi-final. Like, the likelihood is that United will beat Coventry. And extends the season to the end of the season. If we'd lost today, you'd really wonder whether the players would have the resilience to make the last 9 games count. Now, as I said at the beginning, whereas now, they're still playing for that cup final. Yeah.
They've got the massive coveted, they've got that absolute buzz of playing to be part of City winning the treble again.
Come on, Real Madrid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't, like, because I say that because I think when they were making the draw, I think in my head I was saying, I think I want City at this point because I don't see that we're winning this without going through them. I feel like maybe we've got a better chance of beating them in a semi if it comes at a good time. And yeah. I mean, Chelsea have given City a couple of good games recently.
Yeah, and City's fixture list is really, it's really interesting because don't they play like Liverpool and Arsenal either side of the Champions League games? I may be wrong about that. Or Liverpool
is that right?
And someone else. They've got a lot of tough games. Oh, no, I lie. Tottenham after the second leg. But they got Luton and Crystal Palace either side of the first leg. So I'm making that up. Totally making it up.
That sounds more like it.
Talking shite as normal.
Liverpool have the easiest run in, but I mean, I guess we've got the opportunity to beat them again. And we haven't talked about Bruno Fernandes yet. Before the game, there was United mascot that was the one at the front that was coming out with him was crying. And I know obviously any person would try and address the kid and look after the kid in that way. But it felt like he took much more care of that kid than was that he could have got away without doing before this game, I would say. And I think this is something we often forget, but and I hope that I'm then, when I say this, I'm not made to look like a twat some other time later, but Bruno Fernandes, I think, is a mensch. And the way that someone might behave on a football pitch when they're competing for their lives, basically, versus how they actually are, those two things are different.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not some, you might think he's a prick when he plays, but I don't think he's actually a prick, is what I'm saying. And he was gigantic today.
Just like he's hobbling around at the end and still running, playing in defense, playing at quarterback, running forward, like the whole lot. He's massive. I don't get the criticism of him either tactically or in terms of his heart and performance. And it just appears to be entirely about what? The kind of annoying stuff he does on the pitch and the moaning and the complaining. I mean, he got a yellow card for complaining about Liverpool's goal, which was a foul on him, by the way. Like, Gomez has gone straight through the back of him to get to the ball.
It's one of those. It's not totally mind-boggling when you see that it hasn't happened. It's not as bad as that McTominay one at Palace the other day, like last season. But it's like, how are you looking at that and saying he hasn't pushed him over, which is not allowed?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Getting booked for dissent at that point is like semi-understandable, but also stupid because he could easily have got sent off.
He fouled Szoboszlai late in the game as well to give away that free kick. And I mean, Szoboszlai made it out like he'd snapped his leg, and it was quite hard to tell whether there was any actual contact, but it was given as a foul. If the player has to jump out of the way, it's still a foul, by the way. So I think the foul's fine, but yeah, just immense. Ahmad also got sent off. Well, actually got sent off, not also. The first one,
that just made it better.
Brilliant. First one for time wasting, and then the second one for taking his shirt off. It's great.
And scoring the winning goal in between is just an exceptional day's work. I mean, I feel a little bit bad for him because he played really well, so he might have been able to get something in the next game that he's now suspended for. That is home to Brentford or something, isn't it? I'm not sure what he's going to be. My suspicion is not the United player, probably. But he's got some quality. But it's getting to a point with him where someone's going to need to make a decision.
I'm sure they will. I think he'll be moved on. I was just kind of surprised he stayed at the club because he was obviously unfit for the first half of the season, but he's come back, he's got himself fit, and you suspected he'd go out on loan. And given that United's shortage of players has not really been in wide forward areas, it's been in defence, midfield. Yeah, it's a surprise he didn't leave and then has played so few minutes. But contribution for the season today.
And it's because he's also one of those players who's in what situation would you use him? And if we're going to buy another wide attacker, which we presumably are, and Rashford stays, which I guess happens, and what a classic Marcus Rashford performance that was today. A lovely, important goal, some really nice stuff, two dreadful misses, and losing Kwanzaa for that goal, for the first goal. And yeah, I mean, he's a curious footballer. What can you say?
Yep.
Yeah, but we wouldn't have won today without him. So
I mean, the club seem to have said he's definitely not leaving unless that's a negotiating position, but I imagine he stays because, like, his ceiling is higher than the rest of them, except for Garnacho, again, immense today. But Anthony, I don't think we're ever going to get much more from him. Diallo, I'm pretty sure, is not good enough. Sancho, they're going to try and sell, probably even if Ten Hag departs, just because why would you want that around the club? And Greenwood, they will obviously have to sell for whatever they can get for a toxic asset. And you might have noticed that, who's it? Murtagh and Hargreaves were touring European clubs this week trying to flog players.
I mean, I thought Big Vic was all right today.
Yeah, I prefer him in central defence than left back.
I mean, that's a sort of, I mean, I do and I don't. And obviously he's a better centre back than left back, but left back, he's sort of in the game a bit less often. is a fuck up is less likely to cost you a goal. So I have, yeah. But I thought he, I mean, he, I guess he's playing left back more often. So he's working out how a player with his ability can play it to their best. And he's completely out of position, but yeah, he's now making an all right fist of it, I would say. I tell you what, though, I can't believe that team can win the league. Even though they really, really could, it just, they're easily the third best team in the league. Like this, like City and Arsenal, like them and Spurs just have way more points than they should have based on how good they are and how well they play.
I think so. I think that most of this season.
I'm not saying this because it's Liverpool. I haven't seen them play well very often. And they're finding ways to win because Jurgen Klopp's their manager, basically, and they've got Salah. But it would be so unusual. It's so unusual for the third. And obviously the league tells us who the best team is. So let's call it the team with the third highest ceiling and the third highest modal level of performance or some bullshit like that. And say that it would be very rare for the third best team in both those areas to go and win the league. I can't see how it can happen.
Yeah, I mean, they have a City have got a tough run in. So off the run in, it's, yeah, you'd look at Liverpool and go.
And a FA Cup. So maybe, in fact, today, rather than helping City win the treble, we're helping Liverpool win the league. Maybe it'll be that.
If you look at talking of run-ins, Villa, Spurs, and United's run-in, you'd say United's is probably the best. Spurs got a few difficult games. Villa have got everyone back to back. Haven't they got City, Liverpool, and Arsenal in a row, or something like that? Yeah. So it may be a stretch for them.
If Hoyland starts scoring goals again, if Hoyland picks up where he left off and starts scoring goals, I would say, then there is a possibility we could finish above Villa. Villa got a bit lucky today to get that point at West Ham as well. They'll start to get nervous. It's a sort of unfortunate that it's international week, really. We could do with Tottenham having another game or so or two without Van de Ven, who will apparently be back. Because even in that Villa game, he goes off injured in that, but not before he's got Romero out of a hole at 0-0 where Watkins would probably have scored if he hadn't have lanked his way across there at some ridiculous speed. So it isn't over, I guess. And it is now good that we've got the cup. And I mean, and I'm really happy for Mark Robbins as well, who obviously has a crucial role in United's history because it wasn't just obviously the Forest goal. He scored against Oldham as well. And he scored against Newcastle as well in the 3-2. I think he did. So things could have gone very differently. I mean, I don't think Fergie would have got fired by the time we were in the cup final, but winning that trophy got us into the Cup Winners' Cup and told the team knew that they could win things. And that was so, and he in Coventry, he's done just an unbelievable job at Coventry.
Given their resources and everything.
Situation. The ground situation, and they're quite a good team. I saw them last season a couple of times. I've seen them earlier this season. I think I saw them against Leicester. They're a good. They've got good players. They're a good team. If we don't turn up, we could get humiliated. We've got it in us, but obviously we should manage to somehow make that work.
Talking of grumpy managers, did you see Gary O'Neill? Klopp is a rank bad loser, but Gary O'Neill was special. Yeah,
I didn't, but I'd like to. I like him. I think he's good. I don't know how good a manager he is, but he did a great job at Bournemouth. He's done a really good job at Wolves. And he talks generally quite sensibly about the game. And you can see that his players go out knowing what he wants them to do. Did he make a proper dick of himself? As much of a dick of himself
as he was just complaining about, Mark Robbins and Coventry celebrating and stuff like that.
I mean, I saw the thing with the ball boy. Yeah. I mean, that's just, it is so brilliantly snide that like this is one of the reasons we love football, because it gives us moments like that. Grown men prancing about in front of children who've antagonized them earlier. I mean, it's just like, who doesn't want that? And this weekend has just been like the FA, obviously we grew up with the FA Cup. We're old men, we love the FA Cup. But you don't get a league game like the one we saw today. And it's funny because it was also what we saw today. We hardly ever see was a good match time period. You very rarely see that because everyone basically thinking rather take the chances, and there is the risk of losing it in extra time. Because some people talk about why do we bother with extra time? I would sit through every shit period of extra time I've sat through. And for me, it's not often just sitting through it. It's having to work half an hour extra because of it, typing how shit it is. So I feel extra time. I did Arsenal and I did Atletico. And they were both fun games, but the extra time of both of them was rubbish. But I'm pleased I sat through those because it meant I get to celebrate through that. And like days like today
are really why we're here. Did you see the video of the kid celebrating with his dad, the winner? It's been going around on Twitter.
I haven't, but I'd like to. I saw the one of the Stouse kid crying with his dad, who they returned to a bit later on to check that he was still crying, and he was.
Brilliant.
If it's in more excellent grown men action, I said me, age 45 and 9 days. I think that, but I was also, it's just those days where you're just like walking about, just like clenching your fists. Like after the game, I went for a sauna to try and calm myself. Well, not. Saunas are generally quite calming. My wife got mad into health. If you sauna for 20 minutes, 4 out of 7 days a week, you have a good chance of staying alive for longer. So, and also doing it is nice, and you get to hear the ludicrous things that people say in the sauna to each other, like that, like there's no one else there. And I'm just sitting there like, I can barely stay in the sauna because of United.
I'm not sure United extend your life. To be honest, today's like today, but I think generally speaking, it's taking 10 minutes off my life having to watch a game.
So I would say I'm not a nervous watcher. Like for me, it's like just a massive buzz, I guess the greatest buzz that there is. I'm not really a nervous watcher. Like I enjoy it when most of the time, I enjoy it when it gets tight. And I think I learned to compartmentalize defeats. I think maybe that's why I'm not so... I know that if we don't win, the sun's going to rise and the sun's going to set and I'm still going to be a dickhead, I guess. I find that I'm really good at making sure I enjoy it when it's good. And I've become quite good at not getting too angry or agitated or upset when it isn't. Like not carrying the word. I mean, I guess... Yeah, it feels like self-preservation the last decade, anyhow.
I think it comes with being a bit older as well. You're just able to take this in stride, or at least for me. I don't get quite as worked up about the potential for losing. We've also got quite used to it. So, all right. I guess that is it for today's pod. No midweek game this week, but I will probably be on with Wayne in midweek to digest the week and look forward to Brentford. Brentford, who are playing out their arse at the moment, 30th or something, isn't it? What's the point of this international break? Again, this is not an actual real one. It's just friendlies, isn't it?
I guess. I mean, there's a tournament, and I imagine the idea is that you can't not have all the teams that are in tournaments playing together or seeing each other for this amount of time, time. I mean, it's a difficult situation. I'll tell you why, because... We both obviously, and I'm sure most of the people listening to this podcast much prefer club football to international football. But that isn't the case for everyone. So we need international football to exist. So, because it's also, we also like the competitions, but international football, of course, I want international football to be strong because I understand that my experience of football and my footballing interests are not everyone's. And particularly, I think it, probably in places where there's not such a strong club game, the international side means a lot. Or where, if you have players that play, like for a lot of players, you have to expect, if you have a Brazilian that plays for you, he's going to care more about Brazil than playing for United, basically. But then for a lot of footballers, that's the biggest thing that there is. So I want international football to be good. So I feel like I can't sit here and say I've been this international weekend, even though I want to be this international weekend, it's pissing me off. Because I know there has to exist. Even though I also want players to play fewer matches, So I don't exactly know what the answer is.
Yeah, it's just this particular one. I mean, it's like in March. And so we've still got a couple of months after this before the tournament starts. So I'm not sure quite what we're going to learn. But for England to pick Henderson, first half of the season in Saudi, playing at third division level, second half of the season in the Netherlands, playing at championship level, over Kobbie Mainoo. Fuck Gareth Southgate is what I think.
At some level, loyalty is a good thing to have. But also, Jordan Henderson is a bell end who has done what he's done and doesn't deserve to get that kind of special dispensation. And I feel that I'm trying to like put myself in that situation where if I had that kind of relationship with someone, would I judge them for going to play in Saudi and would I let it affect our friendship? I guess if it's someone you're really close to, I guess the answer's probably no.
I mean, Southgate clearly doesn't care at all.
But they're not close friends. I don't know, yeah. But because there's no footballing case for including
Jordan Henderson. No, that's the thing. Like, even aside from...
So is he there as a cheerleader or what?
No, he's going to play. He's going to start because England will play Rice, Bellingham and Henderson as the three in midfield because the only other midfielders in the squad are Conor Gallagher and that's it, isn't it? Is there another midfielder in the squad?
Foden. Play Foden there.
Yeah, but they'll all play wide. They won't play in central midfield. So Foden, Palmer, Rashford, Grealish not in the squad this time, but presumably he will be back. Anyway, whatever. I invest no emotional energy in England. I don't expect a particularly different tournament than normal. But anyway, Kobbie is mint and he should be there just to recognise how mint he is. It's my view on it.
I mean, I feel like it's good for players to get that kind of experience. He would not come back a worse player. I think the question is whether you balance the experience of doing that versus a rest. And that's not a decision I'm qualified to make. But I don't. So I don't know. But I guess I would look forward to watching England more if he was playing for them while worrying that he'd dislocate his shoulder.
Oh, God.
That's my childhood
trauma. Yeah, Brian Robson. All right, we'll leave it there. Backers, we'll be back on Monday with the new tactics pods. There'll be an extra pod during the week as well. Everyone else, if you want to go to patreon.com/NQATpod, we are now doing two extra shows a week. It's well worth $5, whatever that converts to in pounds, £4 something, I think, of your hard-earned money if you wish to do so. Everyone else, we'll catch you next time.
Please.